Come Again is my 30-episode audio series that addresses the biological, hormonal, and medical issues that can sabotage your sex life. This solution-driven, science-based series will help get libido to kick in and clitoral nerve endings to wake up. Come Again comes with loads of supplementary material and is intended for both healthcare professionals and the general public. Go to drstreicher.com/comeagain for more information. Come Again is my 30-episode audio series that addresses the biological, hormonal, and medical issues that can sabotage your sex life. This solution-driven, science-based series will help get libido to kick in and clitoral nerve endings to wake up. Come Again comes with loads of supplementary material and is intended for both healthcare professionals and the general public. Go to drstreicher.com/comeagain for more information. When I first opened the program for Vulvar Health at the Northwestern Medicine Center for Sexual Medicine, the reaction of most women that I mentioned it to was, "What? That's a thing? Are there that many people who need to see a doctor about their vulva?" The answer is yes, that's a thing. And within days of opening, we had a full schedule and a long waiting list of women who were grateful that there were now experts who could diagnose and treat their vulvar pain, itching, and inflammation. Most who'd suffered for years without getting answers. And today, my guest is Dr. Andrew Goldstein, who is my inspiration behind that vulvar program. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, gynecologist, best-selling author, and a nationally recognized menopause expert. When it comes to menopause, midlife, and what comes after, I'm betting you've not gotten a lot of information from your own doctor. If women are given good information, they'll make good choices. And I'm here to give you the inside information. It was many years ago that I first heard Dr. Goldstein lecture and realized that I knew pretty much next to nothing about vulvar conditions that affect so many women and are either misdiagnosed or more likely not diagnosed, like a sclerosis, like complainus, vestibulodynia, chronic vulvar yeast. So I became a Dr. Goldstein groupie, attended his lectures, read his publications, and even spent time in his New York office shadowing him. I learned more in the few days I spent following him around than I learned in 4 years of residency. Dr. Goldstein has always been my vulvar lifeline, the person I called when I had a patient with a complex vulvar condition that was above my expertise. But of all the vulvar conditions out there, among the most frustrating are vulvodynia and lichen sclerosis, because even when properly diagnosed, treatment can be challenging. But exciting news, Dr. Goldstein is here today to fill us in on new treatments and how you can participate in groundbreaking research that is, in his own words, the most important studies ever. So welcome, Dr. Goldstein.
Oh, thanks for having me, Dr. Stryker. Really appreciate it.
All right, we have so much to cover. So it's a good thing both you and I are fast talkers. So everyone strap in, because here we go. We're going to do this into two parts. First, we're going to talk about what's going on in the world of vulvodynia, and then what's going on in your world in lichen sclerosis, both groundbreaking topics. So vulvodynia, real quick, what is it?
So vulvodynia, you know, the general definition is vulvar pain of an unknown diagnosis or an unknown cause lasting at least 3 months. But really, that's a black box. You know, when I started doing this 30 years ago, you know, vulvodynia was, we don't know what it is. We don't know how to treat it. And women don't get better. I think I estimate that about at that time, maybe 50% of the people we saw got about 50% better. But over the last 25 years, we've been able to smash open that black box. We've been able to figure out the different causes of vulvodynia. We've really been able to tailor treatments to the specific causes of vulvodynia. You know, if you walked into a doctor's office and said you had knee pain, you know, they wouldn't just say you take blank, you know, medicine, or you do this for, you know, have this surgery for knee pain. What you would do is you'd figure out exactly if it's arthritis or bursitis or torn ACL, and then a treatment would be tailored to that problem. But again, imagine 25 years ago, we would just say knee pain, you take blank medicine, or we would try this surgery. But we really have been able to now figure out the causes of vulvodynia and then tailor treatments. But unfortunately, even though we've learned a lot about the causes in the last 25 years, the treatments, different treatments have lagged behind. But I'm here, I guess, to talk to you today about really some very exciting research studies that are up and coming that will treat specific types of vulvodynia or have the potential to really treat these things and really move the needle.
But so before we get to that, because in your world, of course, you have women who know they have vulvodynia. They've been looking for treatments. They're very familiar with it. But there are a lot of women out there who really don't know what to expect and what kind of symptoms they might have and all that. And even just starting with the vulva, I mean, anyone who's listened to me long enough knows that the vagina is inside. You can't see it. The vulva is everything on the outside. But when you talk about vulvodynia, can you talk specifically about what areas of the vulva you're talking about? What does this encompass?
So the vulva encompasses the what we call the labia majora, which are the large labia or lips on the outside, the labia minor, which are the smaller lips or labia on the inside, the clitoris, the hood of the clitoris, as well as the perineum, which is the area between the vulva and the anus. But if you're talking about vulvar pain, the area that's affected in the vast majority of cases is an area called the vestibule. Vestibule means entrance. Houses have vestibules. Synagogues, churches have vestibules. They're supposed to be sort of warm, welcome, inviting places. However, in a case of women who have a pain of the vestibule, which we call vestibulodynia, they have severe pain in this area. The pain may be burning. It may be rawness. It can be a sensation of an open wound, acid, burning with urination. All of these symptoms are classic for vulvodynia in general, but very specifically vestibulodynia. Now, of course, one of the main problems when you have pain in this area is you have terrible pain with penetration during intercourse, any type of penetrative intercourse. And so pain with sex is also a hallmark symptom of vulvodynia in general, but specifically vestibulodynia.
And really any penetrative thing, whether it could be a finger being inserted in the vagina, a tampon. But it is so clear, as you said, to emphasize that this is not just sexual pain. There are many, many women that sex is not part of their vestibulodynia story, even though for anyone who has vestibulodynia, it most certainly is. How common is this condition?
You know, part of the problem with figuring out the prevalence of any disease is it has to be diagnosed accurately 100% of the time. And as you pointed out, even if you've had a really good residency training program or you're a good physician in general, you really have had very little training in the diagnosis and treatment of vulvodynia. So it's difficult to say. I think a fair estimate is just shy of 10% of women experience some type of vulvodynia at least some point in time in their lives. So I think a 6 to 10% figure is a very reasonable guesstimate as to what the true prevalence of this disease. But that means there are millions of American women and hundreds of millions of women around the world who have experienced vulvodynia. And it doesn't mean it's lifelong, but it clearly can be debilitating for many years. And you pointed out that it's not just, people talk called these sexual pain disorders, but there's problems with activities of daily living. People can't wear pants. They have pain when wiping after urinating. And just really sitting for prolonged periods of time can be really just a burden. And so it just is a very, it can be a very debilitating situation and very isolating. You know, this is, unfortunately, women are, feel embarrassed by this. They don't want to talk to it. They won't even talk to their best friends about this.
One of the things, and you mentioned the challenging in diagnosing, but one of the reasons it's so difficult to diagnose is because in the majority of these cases, the vulva looks normal. Mm-hmm. You know, I and you are, we're always encouraging women, hey, look at your vulvas. And I've got my hands-free vulvar view hack that I'll put the link to my tape on it so you can get a good look at your vulva. And you should look at your vulva if you're having pain or itching or burning to make sure there's nothing going on. But your vulva may look completely normal, which is why so many women go to their doctors and say, I'm having a very hard time. It hurts. It hurts when I touch it. It hurts when I'm trying to have sex. Doctor takes a look and says, everything's fine. Have a glass of wine. It'll all be okay.
Well, that's so true. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, and that leads to a lot of gaslighting. Mm-hmm. You know, we published a paper last year in JAMA That the majority of women who have vulvar pain and pelvic pain have been gaslit.
It's a great paper. I love that paper.
You know, really, we're proud of it, especially because, you know, I got in a really good journal, but it got a lot of press in the lay press. And that's so important, so that women, you know, would found out about vulvodynia, found out that they're not crazy. They've been meant to feel crazy. They've been told it's in their head, but it's not. And that's why we're so proud of that paper, because it really did, you know, give a voice through millions of women who've been told that, you know, there's nothing wrong with you.
All right. So Dr. Goldstein, woman walks into your office. How does Dr. Goldstein diagnose vulvodynia?
So, I mean, first of all, we spend a long time discussing it. As you know, you spent a lot of time with me. You know, we spend about 20, 25, even 30 minutes discussing the symptoms and the sort of how the symptoms started and how they progressed well before we do an exam. A lot of times the symptoms may have started with chronic infection. It could start with trauma. It could start with an allergic or irritant reaction to a topical medication. It could start slowly, insidiously from hormonal changes, whether that being from birth control pills or perimenopause or even medications that people take for acne or hair loss. So we really spend a lot of time for the first, you know, 30 minutes trying to get, you know, piece together parts of this puzzle. And we really start at the top of the head and work our way down, because things like migraines and reflux and irritable bowel syndrome, they may seem not related at all to vulvar pain, but in fact, a lot of these conditions are related to mast cells. And mast cells are an allergic type of white blood cell that can affect not just the head, you know, causing migraines or not causing, just causing IBS, but these mast cells can affect the bladder and cause something called painful bladder syndrome, interstitial cystitis, where the mast cells can cause endometriosis, another pelvic pain problem, but they also can affect the vulva and cause what we call an inflammatory vulvodynia or inflammatory vestibulodynia. So we really spend a lot of time with the history. Then then of course it's very important to do a thorough exam. And in my thorough exam, as you said, a lot of times things look pretty normal, but you know, after 30 years, I'm able to see subtle changes that maybe the average clinician may miss. Very small areas of redness where adjacent areas are normal. Looking for diminished size of the labia or the clitoris or scarring of the clitoris. So we're looking for very subtle things. We also do a very thorough neurologic exam, because nerve damage or nerve-related causes can cause vulvodynia. We then examine the pelvic floor muscles. One of the leading causes of vulvodynia are tight pelvic floor muscles. When these muscles go into spasm, they cut down blood flow to the vulva and to the skin of the vulva, which causes a deprivation of oxygen going to the vulva, which leads to a buildup of lactic acid. And as any athlete knows, you know, who works out really hard, they'll say, feel the burn. Because buildup of lactic acid in muscles and skin causes burning and throbbing and aching and soreness and rawness. And so that's a leading cause of vulvodynia, or a sequelae of other causes of vulvodynia. So we do a really thorough exam, again, paying attention to possible hormonal causes, possible neurologic causes, musculoskeletal causes, inflammatory causes, skin diseases. And then we put it all together, we go talk about it, and we say, instead of just walking in saying, now you have vulvodynia, we'll say you have a hormonally mediated vestibulodynia, which means that you have pain just to the vulvar vestibule because of hormonal changes. Or you have a neuropathically caused clitorodynia. That means you have a nerve-related pain of the clitoris. So we really have been able to, as I go back to break open this box that just said, this black box just said vulvodynia, and now we've broken it open. We have different different components of the vulvodynia, and now we can tailor treatments specifically.
You know, one of the phrases I remember you saying to a patient, I don't know if you still say this, this was some years ago, but you said, after you gave this explanation of all these different things, you said, basically, your nerve endings are too sensitive and you have too many of them.
And that's what we call that a neuroproliferative vestibular dystonia, right? Too many nerve endings. And not only do you have too many of these nerve endings, they can be way too superficial.
Right. And then they're just on fire, which is, I've heard people describe vestibular dystonia and vulvodynia as the burning vulva syndrome, because that's what it feels like all the time. Okay, one last thing about your exam before we move on to treatments where we really want to get. Well, two things. First of all, do you use magnification as part of your exam?
100% of the time. You have to look, because the naked eye is just not good enough.
Especially as our naked eyes are not 20 years old anymore, I'm just saying.
Right. These are thick. We use something called a colposcope, which is normally used to look for cervical cancer, but we use it to examine the vulva. And it's called vulvoscopy, and we're looking again for subtle hormonal changes, subtle evidence of inflammation, subtle evidence of skin diseases, subtle scarring, all of these things that could be indicators of very specific causes of vulvodynia.
Yeah. And for the clinician who doesn't have a colposcope, it's not crazy to have a HIPAA-designated iPhone and take a picture of the vulva and magnify it, right?
iPads are like, we have a, you know, iPad Pro, and I'm telling you, the photos of these iPad Pros are unbelievable, the vulva. They're really, you know, probably even better than like most colposcopes. Yeah. They've spent, you know, again, the ability to magnify. And of course, the benefit of that is you can document it, again, put it in a HIPAA-protected medical record, but you can show women. And of course, as you know, we have a camera with a that attached to a nice big screen so that women can watch the exam as we conduct the exam. But these photos are so beneficial to show women exactly where their problem is, if they have to use medication, to know exactly where to apply the medication, to follow long-term how the skin looks. Does it look better? Is it less red? Is it more hormonally, well estrogenized, well androgenized? So these are, you know, it's very beneficial to do that. Excellent. For any of the clinicians out there.
Do you still stick a Q-tip in the belly button periodically?
That is a test. That may sound crazy to everyone out there, but the truth of the matter is that the tissue of the vestibule is embryologically derived from tissue that starts in the belly button. And the tissue, this is when a woman is an embryo. So when she is at 6 weeks size, she's about the size of a kidney bean and looks a little bit like a kidney bean. That's where the umbilical cord inserts. And what happens is that tissue goes from where the belly button, the umbilical cord inserts, all the way down. It invaginates. That's where the word vagina comes from. It invaginates, and then it goes to form the vestibule. So, you know, if you have pain in the vestibule and pain only in the belly button, that would suggest that there's a congenital cause of the vestibular dystonia specifically.
So you've heard it here, everybody. Get your Q-tips out. Or if you're one of those women that doesn't like people to touch your belly button, I'm just saying it could be.
And some people will say that it bothers them almost as much as their vestibule does, or they can feel when they touch their belly button, they can feel the pain radiating down straight to the vagina, straight to their vestibule.
Crazy. All right.
Yep.
Current treatment. Let's just talk just for a minute or two, because people who are out there already know what they've been getting. Just talk a little bit about current treatment, and then I want to talk about your research.
Again, we tailor treatments to what we think are the underlying causes. So one of the leading causes I mentioned before is tight pelvic floor muscles. So we send women for pelvic floor physical therapy. We augment pelvic floor physical therapy with muscle relaxants, both in suppository form, sometimes injection, and we augment the physical therapy with vaginal dilators. For hormonal causes of pain at the vestibule and of the vulva, we treat with topical hormones, but not just estrogen. I'm sure your readers and your viewers are very well aware that the vestibule specifically is very dependent on not just estrogen, but on testosterone. In fact, the glands of the vestibule are only testosterone-dependent glands. And so when we treat with hormones, we treat with both estrogen and testosterone. And I'm sure your viewers are very aware of that.
So important people to know.
I'll talk to about, you know, one of the upcoming studies, because it's a medication that we're very excited about for too many nerve endings. Again, we'll talk about another exciting study, but sometimes we use medications like antidepressants and anti-convulsants to lower the nerve conduction. Unfortunately, that actually lowers nerve conduction. It doesn't get rid of the too many nerve endings or the hyper-excitable nerve endings. And so we're actually doing studies to how to actually get rid of those nerve endings. Now, sometimes surgery is necessary, though only in about 7% of my patients do we even mention the word surgery when it comes to vulvodynia. So it really is the very a minority of those are the people. Those are the people who actually do really, really well with a surgery called a vestibulectomy, where we take that very top layer of skin of the vestibule out and replace it with healthy vaginal skin. But again, you know, even though I've done 1,300 of those, that's only because I've earned this gray hair and I've been doing this for a very long time. But again, I evaluate about 500 new sexual pain, vulvar pain patients a year, and only 7% are candidates for surgery. So of those 500, 35 or thereabouts even have the surgery talk. So, you know, there are really a lot of different treatments that were out there that we've been trying over the years, but I'm excited to, you know, come on to tell you about three up-and-coming studies on different types of vulvodynia that really, really for the first time in maybe 15 years can have the chance to move the needle for new therapeutics. And what happened is this all came out of a vulvodynia therapeutics research summit that I envisioned this about 5 years ago. I went to several different potential sponsors, and it was very kind, but the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health, the National Vulvodynia Association, another great organization called Tight Lipped, and my private foundation, we all sponsored a vulvodynia therapeutics research summit where we got 15 experts from around the world. We flew everybody in to Washington, D.C., and basically what we did is we gave every one of these people, it was like a shark tank for vulvodynia. Everyone had to come up with, like, what is your fantasy idea as to how can we move the needle for vulvodynia? We didn't want small little incremental things. We said, what can, in your wildest dreams, what do you think can be used to treat vulvodynia that hasn't been really tried before? We also, besides these organizations, we had patient advocacy groups. We had the National Institute of Health had a representative for this group. And so we all had the Shark Tank type of meeting where everyone pitched their ideas, and then everyone got to throw critical acid on these ideas to really talk them through. And then we all anonymously voted as to which were their best ideas.
Sounds like the Pope. You know, getting elected.
Yeah, I guess. And maybe hopefully this is
white smoke. To take until you came up with the winner.
I'm going to talk to you about white smoke then coming out of this conclave. It was a really exciting meeting. And so the number one choice voted on by all these experts was a medication called ketotifen. K-E-T-O-T-I-F-E-N. Ketotifen. And ketotifen is a mast cell stabilizer. So as I mentioned before, the type of, for inflammatory vestibulodynia, so when people have vestibulodynia because of inflammation, and that can be inflammation because of chronic infections like yeast infections or chronic BV or severe allergic reactions or severe irritant reactions. So all of those things are mediated, caused by an overreaction of white blood cells called mast cells. And mast cells are the bad boy of the inflammatory process. mast cells release histamine, which causes itching and burning. They release inflammatory chemicals called cytokines and leukotrienes and bradykinins and nerve growth factor, which causes nerves to grow and be sensitized. And all of these things cause the pain of vulvodynia. And ketotifen stabilizes mast cells and it prevents the release of all of these nasty inflammatory chemicals. And that's why we're so excited to do a clinical trial of topical ketotifen, which again was voted on by a panel of vulvodynian experts from around the world as their number one choice that has not really been studied for vulvodynia. And so that's, we have a study that is just, we just launched it. We're starting to recruit patients this week for this study. Enrollment is starting really right now. And we're very excited about this. It's going to be 54 women. It's going to be conducted in three different sites in the United States, in Tampa, Florida, in Washington, D.C., and in New York City. And if you're interested in participating for this research, all you have to do is email us at research.cvvd@gmail.com. And so that's research.cvvd@gmail.com.
Is this an oral medication or is this a topical medication?
Topical medication. And again, experts who have already used this, but not in clinical trials. We talked to them. A mutual good friend of ours, Dr. Susan Kellogg, is incredibly excited about this and has been using it. Other mast cell experts around the country, Tanya Dempsey and others, think that this could be the holy grail for an inflammatory vestibular dyspnea. So we're very excited about this.
Is this something that's used on a daily basis, a couple times a week? Is it lifelong? Is it short term?
It's going to be twice daily to the vestibule. And, you know, first of all, I can't tell you if it's going to be lifelong or not. I mean, first we have to prove it works for 3 months. So I don't know. I think that clearly what we know is if you can stabilize mast cells, calm the inflammation down over time, the nerve endings will calm down as well. And then over time, the nerve endings, those too many nerve endings can also sort of regress. So they may have overgrown, but they also, if you get rid of the constant insult of those inflammatory chemicals from mast cells, then those nerve endings will regress. And so this may be a cure. Now, I think that I don't want to overpromise. First, I want it to be a treatment. And if it's a great treatment, that is amazing because, again, we're lacking treatments for an inflammatory vestibular dyspnea.
And who is eligible to enroll? And I'm going to put all this information and links and all that in the program notes, but just real quick, I mean, because this can affect women of all ages. So who is eligible to enroll in the study? Do they have to be off their other medications? You're just kind of
they can even be doing physical therapy. There are certain lists of medicines that they could be confounding that they can't be on. But it can be premenopausal women or menopausal women, as long as the menopausal women have if their atrophy is well treated, so they can be on topical hormones. And again, they can be even on stable doses of other medications for vulvodynia, as long as it's stable. If they're getting physical therapy, as long as it's a stable regimen, they can continue to be on those things. So we're really trying to be as inclusive as real life as possible. But if you think you may be eligible, again, just contact us at that email and we'll send you the informed consent. You can read about it. And you can let us know what medications or what you're currently doing, what you've tried, and we'll let you know.
And it sounds like someone has to already have the diagnosis of vulvodynia, or is that not the case? If someone just has vulvar burning and they think that they might have this, can they sign up and be evaluated, or this is someone who already has a known diagnosis?
They could sign up to be evaluated again if you think, oh my God, at the entrance. So you may be coming, making a quick trip. You know, it's only a 15-minute early evaluation. But if you think you have vulvodynia and then we will be happy to evaluate you. Now, I just want to let you know. So first of all, we want to thank the National Vulvodynia Association, who's sponsoring the trial, along with my private foundation called the Gynecologic Cancer Research Foundation. So we're splitting the cost of this study between the two of us, of these two nonprofit groups. It is the largest clinical trial the National Vulvodynia Association has ever supported. So we're really proud about this. It really, and again, it was the number one picked choice of the world leading group of vulvodynia experts.
Yeah. It sounds like the biggest limiting factor is you have to be able to either live in or get to.
So it's four visits. So it's I know that that can be.
They are in-person visits. I just want to be clear that people have got to go to one of the locations to.
Tampa, New York City, Washington, D.C. That is correct.
Yeah. And I will put, I mean, you've, all your clinics are there. Your colleagues, Joel Kraft, there's so many others are just incredible, incredible human beings and experts. I'm going to put all that information in the program notes.
So the number two voted on choice of all those experts is going to be now a National Institute of Health funded study, much smaller. It's called, the medication is called resiniferatoxin. Resiniferatoxin is this incredibly strong medication that's related to the chemical in chili peppers called capsaicin. So if you eat something that's chili pepper and your mouth burns really, really badly, well, that's a chemical that it's in the chili pepper called capsicum or capsaicin. And that binds to nerve endings, and that's why it burns so much. But this medicine, this resiniferatoxin, is 100 times stronger than that. And so what happens is not only does this chemical bind to the nerve endings, it actually ablates them. The nerve endings actually die off. Now,
That sounds painful.
Oh my God, it could be terribly painful, but it happens so fast that the plan is that we're going to put people asleep for a half an hour. They're going to get anesthesia, and this medicine works within 15 minutes.
And there's no healing. Like when it's done, it's done. It's just like blasts.
Right, because all it does, well, we don't know. Again, that's why it's a clinical trial. But it's under the auspices of both the National Institutes of Health and the FDA. And so you have all of the, you know, safeguards that it's necessary to have these, to do these clinical trials. So you'll be monitored. And the people at the National Institutes of Health, especially the anesthesiologists who are conducting this, are like the smartest people I've ever come in contact with. They are incredibly bright, and they think that this is not only could resiniferatoxin be used for like diseases like this, but also they think for chronic pain from severe pain from metastatic cancers and things like that. So they've been working on this medication for more than a decade, and things are moving forward in clinical trials. And so that will be starting. That is for people who are going to have who would otherwise going to be having a vestibulectomy. So people who have too many nerve endings, having what is known as a neuroproliferative vestibulodynia. So if you're already thinking about having a vestibulectomy, someone has told you need surgery, this could be a chemical surgery that you go to sleep, you wake up, the nerve endings are gone, but you haven't had a knife cut to you. The tissue has it. You don't have a 6-week recovery. You're done. And so we're very excited about that. That's number two. And I got to throw one last one. We're so excited about the third idea. And the third study is that, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of causes of vulvodynia are tight pelvic floor muscles. And sometimes they're so tight that no matter how many dilators you use or how much physical therapy you do, you can't get those muscles to relax. And in those situations, we've relied on using a botulinum toxin, which a lot of people, Botox or others, Xeomin, Dysport, Jeuveau. And so we're very, very, but the problem with those is that they're not covered by insurance. So it can be thousands and thousands of dollars to get those injections. And sometimes you can convince your insurance companies to cover some of it, but most of the time you can't. Well, I'm so happy to report that MERS, the company that makes Xeomin, which is a botulinum toxin, has agreed to fund a study, a really adequately powered study for zeomin, which is a botulinum toxin for vulvodynia. And what's so exciting about that trial is every woman who's in that trial will get the medication. Now, not everyone gets it initially. So there's a placebo initially in about half, and again, so 50% of the women initially will get placebo. But if at the end of the 3 months you have not, we unblind you and you got the placebo, you will get the medicine. And it's about $5,000 worth of zeomin. And so it's an incredible opportunity for people who've always needed or wanted Botox or botulinum toxin, but couldn't afford it, or their doctors didn't know how to do it, or were too scared to do it. And or the doctors used to use a little bit because they just didn't know how much to use. So this is the first adequately powered trial with enough botulinum toxin zeomin to really treat women for vulvodynia. And also what's so exciting about this is then maybe we get it FDA approved, and therefore it's not experimental treatment, and your insurance companies will actually cover the cost. So it's not just the 50 women who are in this clinical trial, but also this really could move the needle for millions of women who really need botulinum toxin, but who can't afford it because their insurance won't pay for it because it's experimental treatment. So these are three super exciting studies on vulvodynia that are upcoming. All of them, if you just contact us at research.cvvd@gmail.com, you can learn about these trials. The zeomin, which is the botulinum toxin study, is also going to be starting up very, very shortly. So all three of these trials are all starting within the next 2 or 3 months. And so the ketotifen is really enrolling already. So just please contact us if you have vulvodynia, and we may have a solution for you.
The other condition which plagues so many women, is so painful, that is so underdiagnosed, undertreated, and can even have long-term serious consequences. So lichen sclerosis, what can you tell us about lichen sclerosis?
So lichen sclerosis is an inflammatory skin disease. So this is a skin disease of the vulva that is an autoimmune disease. That means your immune system has sort of made a mistake and attacks your own skin. That causes chronic inflammation in the skin. And that chronic inflammation causes the skin to scar, and that's what sclerosis means, causes the skin to thicken, and if left untreated, can even cause the skin to turn into cancer. It's more likely to be diagnosed in prepubertal girls and menopausal age women because these are low estrogen states at times in women's lives, and estrogen tends to lower the symptoms of lichen sclerosis, which is itching. One of the main hallmark symptoms is itching, and when you have a lot of estrogen, you have less itching. But women and females of all ages, girls and women, all get lichen sclerosis. Now, so one of the main symptoms of lichen sclerosis is itching. Another one is severe pain with intercourse because there's scarring of the vulva, and that scarring narrows the entrance of the vulva and the entrance to the vagina, so that women will rip or tear during intercourse, any type of penetration. Additionally, there's the labia that we talked about earlier, the lips, they will scar away. The hood of the clitoris can scar on top of the clitoris, so the clitoris can be, people think, you know, it's buried. And so there's a lot loss of sensation. So all of these things can occur with lichen sclerosis.
And, you know, in postmenopause women, you know, certainly we discussed about how the skin can get thinner and how the labia can even disappear. But I just want to be really clear. It looks really different to an expert. You know, if you're looking,
yes,
in terms of telling, is this changes from from atrophy, from hormonal changes versus lichen sclerosis? First of all, yes, you can have both. It's very common to have both, but they also do look very different, which is why it's so important that someone take a look. And one of the things that just makes me crazy, and I know it makes you crazy too, is this idea that women don't need to have a pelvic exam after a certain age. And they think that itching is just normal or part of getting older, so no one's looking. And even the dermatologists, I mean, I went to my dermatologist a week ago for my total body check, which I think is a very important thing to do. And she said to me, well, do you want me to do a vulvar exam? And I said to her, did you ask me if I wanted my arm examined? I mean, you know, like, why is, you know, skin is skin. And, but the dermatologists don't do that automatically. They make it optional. Most people's inclination is to say, no, that's okay. So I just wanted to put a word out there that please, you know, someone's got to look at your vulva. Who knows what they're looking at?
An adequate light and things like that. I mean, I'm married to a dermatologist, so I don't want to make fun of the dermatologist, although I will. And that, you know, they'll say, okay, we're going to do a complete skin exam. Leave your underwear on.
She said to me that the medical assistant said, leave your underwear on. I said, really?
Right. And if they do, they'll sort of peek down the underwear, which is really not a good adequate. You really need to be up in stirrups and things like that with adequate light and visualization to see the skin of the vulva adequately. So yes. But the vulva does. And this is not that uncommon. This disease affects at least 2% of all females, probably higher, as it probably affects up to 5% of women who are in their 80s and older. So this really is a disease that's not that uncommon and, you know, it needs to be diagnosed.
How often are there no symptoms? Because I think a lot of women say, well, I don't need to get checked because I don't have any symptoms. Can you have lichen sclerosis and be completely asymptomatic?
Absolutely. Probably 30% to 40% of all women with lichen sclerosis, but probably up to 40% of reproductive age women, so women before their menopausal, they are not symptomatic. The most common presenting symptom in reproductive age women is pain with intercourse, not itching.
And if they're not having intercourse, they wouldn't know it, you know?
Right. And that was a great study by our friend and colleague, Dr. Jill Kraft, who really showed that that's and this was a study of over 500 women, and that again, reproductive age women. So if you're having pain with intercourse, it should be evaluated because besides vulvodynia, it could certainly be lichen sclerosis. If you have bleeding with any penetrative sex, that needs to be evaluated because if you're bleeding from the vulva, it could be a skin disease. If you're bleeding from internally from the cervix, it could be cervical precancer. So these things are all, you know, if you have bleeding with sex, it needs to be evaluated. So for the last 40 years, really, or 35 years, the mainstay of treatment for lichen sclerosis has been very strong corticosteroids, steroid creams. And they have really been a life-changing thing for women who have lichen sclerosis because corticosteroids can be very, very, very helpful treating lichen sclerosis, not just helping the symptoms of lichen sclerosis, but actually treating the disease. But there are a lot of downsides with corticosteroids because not only do they cut lower inflammation, they cause thinning of the skin because they prevent the steroids prevent the formation of collagen, and your skin is always remodeling. And collagen is sort of the plaster of the tissue of the skin. And so if you imagine trying to, you know, remodel your house and you can't put up new drywall or you can't use new any more nails. And so over time, if you use corticosteroids, the skin can thin. And also about 25% of people, even if they're adequately treated with steroids, they still have symptoms of lichen sclerosis. So we've been looking for years of alternative or adjunct treatments to the corticosteroids. So 5 years ago, I did a study where I biopsied women who had lichen sclerosis, and we biopsied the skin that was sclerotic, that was abnormal, and then we biopsied adjacent normal skin, and we sent both of those samples for something called RNA. And RNA is the type of sort of the part of your DNA that shows what genes are turned on and which genes are turned off. And by doing this study, we were able to figure out the very specific inflammatory pathway that was active in lichen sclerosis. And that pathway is called the JAK-STAT pathway, JAK-STAT. And as soon as we published these results, we had four or five drug companies contact us, say, oh my God, we have JAK inhibitors that could work with lichen sclerosis. And so essentially what this is would be a much more laser-focused treatment for lichen sclerosis as opposed to like the carpet bomb or the shotgun approach that steroids are. So we're focusing just on the very specific inflammatory pathway that is, and so we're using a topical JAK inhibitor. And so we're doing a very exciting phase 3 clinical trial. It's going to be in over 30 sites around the United States of a phase 3, which means it's, if it shows benefit, then it's going to get approved from, it could be approved by the FDA. And that trial for a topical JAK inhibitor is going to be starting in April or May of this year. So again,
so big, I can't tell you.
This is huge. This is huge.
I was talking about the Center for Sexual Medicine in our vulvar program, I would say the overwhelming majority of women that we saw, other than menopausal dryness and atrophy, but the overwhelming majority of women that we saw with vulvar issues, lichen sclerosis, most of them had never been diagnosed or had been misdiagnosed, or the treatment wasn't working well for them. And like you said, this is not optional treatment. If women are treated, they do fine. If they're not treated, it can go on to vulvar cancer. So this is
or severe scarring or other really other big problems. Yeah. So this is huge. But again, this really has the chance to move the needle, and I'm very excited and I'm proud because it really stems from our basic science research. It's where really how things in the lab can actually lead to clinical developments and help women. So we're so thrilled about this clinical study that will be ongoing again starting in April or May of this year. And we're also very excited about a study that we've been conducting for the last year, and we're almost finished enrolling, but there's still about a dozen or so slots left of a topical preparation of not to just to replace steroids, but to augment the treatment with steroids with a topical barrier that cuts down inflammation. And that topical barrier is called Strata, and that's a silicone barrier. And as I mentioned to you, about 25% of women, even if they're adequately or appropriately treated with corticosteroids, they still have symptoms. And the Strata is for women who are on a stable dose of steroids, but who still have symptoms of itching, burning, and discomfort from their lichen sclerosis. And we really think this is also a game changer. So if you have lichen sclerosis and you're on a clobetasol or halobetasol or triamcinolone or other steroid, but you're still symptomatic, you just say, you know, I just don't feel comfortable most of the time. I can't wear pants. I just don't feel comfortable, even though I'm doing exactly what my doctor told me as far as using the corticosteroids. Please contact us, because this study, now that study is being conducted besides Tampa, New York, and Florida. It's also being conducted in Utah and Salt Lake City. So it really, that Strata study really is going to, maybe not as huge game changer as the topical JAK study, but for the 25% of women who are adequately treated but are still symptomatic, it can be a life-changing benefit.
All right, so I have some questions about Strata. First of all, just, you know, funny story, just when I earlier said when I opened this up about how you're the guy I call whenever I have questions. And I was at a conference and they always have these booths where they have all these products and anyone can get out there and hawk their product. And 99% of the products that are out there are just, you know, beyond horrible. And this person was handing me this tube of Stret and saying, no, this is really amazing. I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, if it's so amazing, how come I haven't heard about it from my friend, Dr. Andrew Goldstein? And I texted you and you texted me right back and said, no, this is really amazing.
No, and it isn't. And I'm, but you know, that's the, but the reason is I don't believe, but I'm like you, I'm a skeptic.
Yeah.
And so they told me it was amazing. And I said, prove it to me. Let's do a study. And so they actually sort of put their money where their mouth was, and they're sponsoring an adequately, you know, powered clinical trial to prove that what we've, that we, you know, that this does work, this works better than placebo, that it really does move the needle on the treatment of the symptoms of lichen sclerosis.
And is this an over-the-counter product?
It is, though it's available not just at your normal Walgreens or Duane Reade or CVS. It has, it's a special mail-in. And we would encourage people not to just use it without outside of this clinical trial because we haven't proven it yet. So we really want to prove it. And again, it's only a 3-visit clinical. You know, you only have to come to the centers for vulvovaginal disorders 3 times in a 3-month period to be part of that clinical trial, and it will be well worth your effort.
Aside from the greater good of helping research and helping yourself potentially, you also get product for free when you
absolutely
participating in a clinical trial. Is this a daily product, a daily topical, or a few times a week?
Yeah, a couple times a day. It's an amazing, but it forms this, it's truly, the mechanism is really fascinating. It forms this, it's the same type of mechanism that they use for wound healing and for burn victims. For, it creates a barrier, a very silky barrier of silicone. And silicone, as you know, is inert. So you would think, okay, this is not really doing anything biologically. It's just like putting a Band-Aid on something. But that's not really true. But what happens is when you create that barrier, you prevent bacteria from getting on the area. And bacteria cause inflammation. And they cause what is known as oxidative stress. So interestingly, just by creating the silicone barrier, there's less inflammation in the skin, even though it's a quote-unquote a non-active product. So it's fascinating. We did a very small pilot study where 5 women who were off their steroids, and 3 of those 5 women had decreased inflammation on biopsies after using this for 3 months without a steroid. We would have expected all 5 of them to get worse, and 3 of them had decreased inflammation. Fascinating stuff.
Okay, so, but explain this to me, because you're telling me what I'm hearing from you is that this primarily works because it is such an extraordinary barrier and therefore allows wound healing to occur. Why don't you just slap on a whole wad of Vaseline? That's a barrier.
It is. It's very unpleasant. It gets everywhere. It also is sticky and is unpleasant. But there was a study years ago which showed that of women who just used petrolatum, petroleum jelly, there was a decrease in symptoms of lichen sclerosis of 74%. Now, which it was 78%. It was very, very high. But a problem, of course, is that didn't actually treat the disease process. So we're not saying that we should use this topical barrier only is the only treatment. It's to augment inflammatory modulators like clobetasol, like calcineurin inhibitors, which is tacrolimus or pimecrolimus. So you have to still treat the disease. But again, 25% of people who are adequately treating the disease have symptoms. So for those women, we think that this could be a game changer. So I'm just so excited. Thank you for having me on because, you know, we have 5 new up-and-coming studies or ongoing studies that for the first time, really 15 plus years, can move the needle for women with vulvar pain.
This is huge. And I'm going to put all the links in the program notes because there is a lot here. There's so much more we could have talked about. One last thing that we're not going to talk about because we're out of time, but I just want to mention the importance of avoiding vulvar irritants in life in general, but certainly if you have a vulvar condition. And women are putting all kinds of crap on their vulvas. They should stop. It's only making things worse. Stop putting all that stuff on. Even the soaps that people use, a lot of the products, a lot of the vaginal lubricants. So I'm going to put a link to a Substack article that is going to give you a list of all of the common vulvar irritants that should be avoided. I will run that list by Dr. Goldstein to make sure I have not forgotten anything, but that's a very, very important part of just how you treat your vulva in general. Even if you do not have a vulvar condition, you can prevent a lot of things happening by not putting stuff on your vulva that doesn't belong. So with
you're
that,
here.
And please, and I'm going to send everyone to your website because there are conditions we did not discuss. Your website is loaded, loaded, loaded with information.
And that's www.vulvodynia.com. So pretty easy to remember, vulvodynia.com. It's a website and lots of tons of information. We publish all of our clinical, all our studies under there. Look under papers or publications. We have all of our studies that that I've talked about today under research. We have all the clinical trials. But if you're interested in participating in that clinical, on those clinical studies that we talked about today, you just email us at research.cvvd. That stands for Center for Vulvovaginal Disorders. So research.cvvd@gmail.com. Let us know what you're interested in and we'll get you on the list. And I promise one of my amazing research coordinators will reach out to you and we'll talk about it because it's time to improve option, give women more options for the care that they need.
And this truly, and I don't say this lightly, and you probably never heard me say this before, this podcast is going to change lives because there are so many women out there suffering. You've seen them, I've seen them, and these are things that are going to really make a difference. So thank you for the work that you do, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us about it.
Thank you for this opportunity. It's great seeing you.